Hi, everyone. This is FBG Margo, and today's interview is going to be with Rana Ambrose, and she is a former Canadian politician who served from 2015 to just a few weeks ago as the interim director of the Conservative Party and leader of the opposition. She'll be joining the Canada Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, where she'll be focusing on Canadian-American relations. Although at the time of this interview, however, she was still in office. We really love talking to Rana, and I hope you guys enjoy this episode. She was terrific. Thanks.
This is FBG Jen.
And FBG Kristen.
And I'm FBG Margo, host and producer. You're listening to the podcast that will help you keep a lid on the junk in the trunk and inspire you to live a happy and confident life.
Each episode, we chat with motivational experts and celebs and share our own candid adventures in being healthy.
If you're looking for a podcast that's equal parts hilarious and enlightening, well then welcome to the Fit Bottomed Girls podcast.
Welcome back to the Fit Bottom Girls podcast. This is FBG Margo, and on the line today we have Jen.
Yo.
And we have Kristen.
Hey, guys.
And Jen, you weren't on this interview. Kristen and I were, and it was fascinating. We're speaking to Rana Ambrose today, and she is based in Canada. She is the chief conservative opponent, I guess you would call it, to Justin Trudeau. But she was very interesting, and I know some of you guys might be a little sick of politics, but I'd really like you to listen to this episode because it doesn't get too political, I don't think. What did you think, Kristen?
No, it really doesn't. We do ask her in the beginning to kind of break down what the different parties are like in Canada, because it's really different than it is here in the States. And regardless of what your political affiliation is here, we're not going to get into anything that's going to really turn you off, I don't think, unless everything we do turns you off, in which case I don't know why you would still be listening.
True.
But yeah, I mean, it's literally like one question where we sort of get the breakdown. It doesn't get heated or icky. This is not, you know, we're not on CNN or anything. And then we just get into how she handles an insanely busy workload and still makes health a priority, and a little bit more about busy women and health and how that's got to be important because we're the ones taking care of ourselves and of others.
Does she have a Canadian accent?
Yes.
Yeah, kinda.
Kinda?
Yeah, so I'm gonna play you a little clip right now. We talked to her a little bit before we did the podcast, and she said something just so amazing that I'm so glad I caught this little segment. So just listen to this for a second.
Good. Just busy. It's always busy.
I'm sure. We can't believe you had time to talk to us.
Well, you know what? It's important. It's important. I love what you guys do. I think you're fantastic. You're fabulous. So thanks for taking the time to chat with me. And I, you know, I think it's great that we're talking about, you know, busy women, powerful women that do good things in their community, wherever they are. I just happen to be in politics, but that they take time to be healthy and strong and, you know, strong on the inside and on the outside. And I'm a big believer in that.
I love how she says important.
And I don't know if that's Canadian. That was cute. Yeah.
I don't know if that's Canadian or not, but yeah, that's what this is all about, really, this interview. And I mean, Jen, didn't you talk to her about her workouts for a blog post?
Yeah, we did a blog post where she shared one of the workouts she does when she's on the road, because she's, you know, as you guys were talking about, how I know she talks about in the interview, how busy she is and how much she travels. And yeah, it was like a great booty working workout. So we can put that link in the post and in the show notes so that people can go and do her workout after this. It seemed tough.
Oh yeah, totally. And her schedule is no joke. Kristen and I were asking her, there was one point she traveled to 9 cities in 3 days. And
it's just insane.
Which is insane. Yeah, exactly. And then Kristen, I don't know about you, how you felt, but I asked her about, she was the health minister for Canada. She was that, I think it was in 2008. She gave an amazing answer. And I think it was very humbling for me. I don't know about you, Kristen.
Yeah. Sometimes I think it's very easy for all of us to get, even if we in general are quite humble, I think it's really easy to get a little caught up in your importance and your thinking that, like, okay, you know, my job can't survive or my workplace can't survive without me doing my job, or, you know, my family can't make it through a day without me taking care of them. And then you talk to someone like her who has literally made a huge difference in the history of the world in certain instances. I don't think I'm overstating anything there. And it just kind of gives you a little bit of perspective. So yeah, it was definitely eye-opening and certainly humbling.
And I'm just going to correct myself right now. I'm sorry. It was 2014. She was the health minister in Canada. But she also talks about how she likes to bring her own popcorn, and she flavors it with lots of spicy stuff to eat healthy when she's on the road. And I just was wondering, like, what are your favorite snacks when you're on the road?
I feel like I would have to bring like 2 gallons of popcorn on the road with me if I was going to, like, I would have like a suitcase of popcorn. I can put down so much popcorn. It's so delicious. That we can talk about popcorn at some other show. But when I do some traveling occasionally for FBG, and I just not that long ago visited Kristen in Florida, and kind of like my go-to healthy snack that I always have with me, I always have like way more protein bars that I think I'm going to need, because you never know what's going to happen in an airport, at what time of day it's going to happen, or how hungry you're going to feel. Plus, I always have a bag full of almonds with either like raisins or dried apricots in it, because I always find that I want something like, I don't know, fatty and filling that's like denser than, I don't know, like a piece of fruit. But so I need the fat. I don't know. That's like always my thing. So I have those two things. And then as soon as I get through security, I always buy a liter of water. Even though it is stupid expensive, or if I think ahead enough, I'll bring like a hydro flask or something else I can refill. So I always have my full thing of water and try to drink as much water as possible. And then I always have gum with me. I don't know what happens when I travel, but my mouth always just feels disgusting. Like I always feel like I'm dehydrated. I always feel like I have bad breath. And so instead of brushing my teeth like 8 times a day, I just end up chewing a lot of gum. And sometimes that helps too, because I don't know, like if I'm in taxis or something, sometimes my stomach can get a little bit upset. So like peppermint gum always helps me with that. And then I feel fresh and minty. So those are kind of my standbys, my tricks.
I like it.
What about you, Kristen?
Yeah, Kristen.
So I second the almonds. I really like having almonds around, or other nuts. Like I'm not opposed to a cashew or a mac nut. Love those.
Macadamia.
And then I let's just go take a mac nut break. And then I will also a lot of times have like little single packets of protein powder. And if I've got it depends on how much room I've got in my bag. If I'm packed to the gills, then this doesn't work so well. But a lot of times I'll bring a blender bottle that has a little doohickey on the inside. Technical word, doohickey. And then, you know, I just can
blender
fill
ball.
That with some water.
The blender ball.
Oh, yeah, it probably is the blender ball.
I think that's what it's called. It's the doohickey. Yeah.
I think you're right. And then because I have some issues with my jaw, so sometimes, especially if I'm, like, tired and stressed, chewing is just not a lot of fun. So having the ability to just, like, have a protein shake anywhere for me is really important. And that helps a lot. And then I don't go anywhere without a water bottle, honestly, like, ever. So yeah. I've always got a big water bottle, and it's always either full or in the process of being filled. So yeah, that's, and then sometimes I bring fruit, like I'll bring a little Tupperware and pack it with berries and stuff, because that's like, that just feels like such a treat when you're in an airport and nothing seems fresh.
Yeah.
So I do love that. What about you, Margo?
I second or third, excuse me, on the nuts. I love nuts. Nuts with raisins always does me fine. Yeah. I am crazy for Kind bars, and if Kind bars ever wants to sponsor the show, we would love that. Come on down. I'll give you the greatest reading of your life. I love those Kind bars. I'm also I guess I'm a protein junkie, but I love beef jerky, and I have like my favorite brands, and the beef jerky gives you like kind of crazy breath. So I always have my mints, and that's always helping, you know, also just keeping hydrated. I feel like mints help me with that. And then I'm like you guys, I always have water with me everywhere. I just feel like I'll perish if I don't.
Sometimes if I have a little bit of extra room, or if I know I'm going on a long flight, you can get like a peanut butter packet. I know that like Justin's makes them.
Yep.
They're so good. And then if you are stuck somewhere, it's pretty easy in the airport to get like a banana or like an apple or something. You smear it on and boom.
I usually grab a banana too, I have to say, because I trust those the best of all the fruit that's out there.
Yeah. They're very well packaged. You don't have to eat the outside.
Right.
Bananas.
And can I get real here for a second?
Yes,
go.
You guys, I love combos. I really love combos. I love the pizzeria ones. I really try not to have those like, every time I do a business trip or any trip. But if I'm on like a long travel thing and I am hungry and I want something that like feels a little like a treat and will also be kind of filling, I get a little thing of combos. No shame.
Man, getting real. Hero. No shame. No shame. No guilt. It's like when you walk by whenever they have like the cinnamon sugar nuts or like the pretzels.
Ooh.
Yeah, like that always just like, I'm like, that smells better than it tastes. That's what I tell myself. Yeah, so I just enjoy the smell. I enjoy the smell.
So great. Now I'm hungry. We have a show to put on.
I know, right?
Lunchtime.
So I guess we'll just go right into this interview right now, guys. What do you say?
Good.
All right.
I'm all about it.
All right. Rona Ambrose leads Canada's official opposition in the House of Commons. She's a respectful leader who puts her team first and is always willing to roll up her sleeves to get the job done. Behind the hot cup of tea is a determined public policy expert who understands that government actions can have a real impact on families and businesses across the country. As a key member of the Harper cabinet, she solved problems across 9 government departments, all while being named the most civil parliamentarian. Rona is focused on creating jobs, looking out for the middle class, and making sure our economy grows so that Canada can continue to be the best place on earth to live, work, and raise a family. She is a passionate advocate for women in Canada and around the world and led the global movement to create the International Day of the Girl at the United Nations. When she's not working, which is rare, Rona is usually found with hiking boots, making her way up to the summit. She's here today to talk about how she stays healthy and focused with a 24/7 career. Welcome to the show, Rona Ambrose.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you, Rona. So this is Margot, and on the line today we have Kristen, and I'm going to ask you the first question. Doing research for this interview, I'm really enjoying learning about your career and how passionate you are about women's rights. What do you think gave you so much passion for your career, and how do you handle the sexism that just has to crop up from time to time? Because every woman has been spoken down to in a work situation at some time.
Absolutely. Well, first, Margot, I would say I think one of the reasons I'm passionate about girls' rights and women's rights is because I, as a little girl, I had an opportunity with my parents to live in a few different countries. Some of them were third world countries where I saw firsthand what it means when you don't get to grow up in a place where you have rights, like the right to go to school, the right to learn about the things that will empower you later on in life. And I just feel so passionate as a Canadian that we should do everything we can with the voice and power we have as women, especially myself, who does have a powerful voice, to support especially little girls and women around the world who live in countries where they don't get to do things as basic as going to school and having a right to education. So I'll say that. But look, on the sexism part, politics is... it's a tough sport. It's a tough job. And yes, I've experienced all kinds of situations, especially in the Twitter world where people are vicious. But you know, you've got to confront it. You've got to call it out for what it is. It's sexism. It's nasty. It's not, there's no place for it. Women deserve to be respected in the, you know, in the roles that they're in, including in politics. And when you've worked hard to get to be where you are, you should have that respect, just like a man would. So yes, sexism is alive and well in politics, but it takes strong women to stand up to it and strong men to stand up to it too. So I think the big thing for me is to call it out when you see it. And if it's just pure nastiness, you know, some of these trolls that you find on Twitter, also sometimes you just discount it. You just say, you know what, your voice is not important. I'm going to focus on good and positive things. So that's another way that I deal with it.
That's such a good approach, and I think that's something every last one of us can probably use more of in our lives. Like, not everything that everybody has to say counts. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
Now, right now, the political climate here in the States is a bit heated and pretty strongly. Oh God, yes. And it's really strongly divided along party lines. And I know that the conservative versus liberal breakdown looks different in Canada than it does here. But I wondered if you could just explain a little bit, you know, the elevator pitch of what that looks like in Canada versus what we see here in the States.
Well, I mean, we have a parliamentary system and you have a different system in Congress, so we operate differently. But I think the one thing that's different at a really high level in our politics is we don't seem to have, I guess, as extreme ends of the political spectrum as much. And I don't know how to articulate that other than to say that the Conservative Party of Canada and the Liberal Party of Canada have different approaches, but we you know, the Conservative Party, without a doubt, is the party of lower taxes and a freer economy and more personal freedom, more personal liberty. And the Liberal Party has always been about, you know, it's more about, you know, deficits. It's a different economic approach. And the government has, there's a belief and a philosophy that the government has a lot of the solutions whereas the conservatives will say, well, look, we can find those solutions in other ways. So they're differing philosophies, but I would suggest to you that the majority, if not most of that, really falls, you know, in the center of the political spectrum, center right to center left. And I think that's the difference. I think in the states, there does seem to be, in your last election at least, quite a bit of extreme right and even extreme left. And that was an interesting thing to watch in the United States in the election. So I don't think we've had that happen here in Canada. And I think part of that's because over the last 10 years, we've seen the middle class grow by 30%. We don't have the same level of income inequality. We don't have the same fights about healthcare. And those are pretty basic issues for regular working people to deal with, you know, no access to healthcare, potentially serious income inequality issues. And we don't have those in Canada. So I think that makes a difference.
Now, you had an unusual upbringing. You grew up in both Brazil and Canada. And by the way, I have Brazilian cousins, so I know how different the culture is there. So I just was wondering, do you think this has affected your worldview and how you see Canada's place beyond your borders?
Absolutely. You know what? There's no doubt in my mind it had a huge impact on me. We lived in six different countries when I was growing up. Brazil was the country we lived in the longest, so I've always liked to pretend that I have some Brazilian in me because they're just, I just love the Brazilian culture. I love the Brazilian people. I love the Brazilian food, and I miss it so much. But I mean, I'm first and foremost a Canadian, but one of the things that I learned and I really, you know, keep in my heart is how lucky we are to be a Canadian. And when you grow up in different parts of the world, you just realize, wow, we have an amazing country and we have to, you know, continue to fight for the things that matter, like human rights, and never take for granted those kinds of issues. And remember how privileged we are to live in a country where we have those things. And if we do have a voice to help people in places where they don't have those rights. And that's why I think I've been passionate about helping girls in other parts of the world, whether it's through the United Nations International Day of the Girl or through initiatives. You know, we fought really hard in the last year and a half to help the Yazidi girls who have been sex slaves to ISIS. Horrible, horrible situation. And we fought really hard to get our government to bring girls here to Canada so they would have safe haven. And if we don't use our voice to speak up for girls like this, you know, they need us to do that because we're in a place of privilege and in a place of power.
Yeah. So that actually leads me to what I had planned for my next question really well. I would love for you to tell us all about International Day of the Girl.
Well, it was a really great undertaking. Look, I was approached when I was at the United Nations by a group of girls who were from all over the world, but most of them were from Africa, girls that really, you know, came from places where they didn't have an opportunity to go to school. They didn't have rights. They didn't have the kinds of privilege that we would have living in a place like United States or Canada. And they asked me if I would help them champion a United Nations International Day of the Girl. And of course, the first response everybody used to give them was, why? We already have International Women's Day. And they said to me, it's not enough because Women's Day is always about reproductive rights and about other women's issues that aren't really girls' issues. We're just little girls. We want to talk about having school supplies and having an education and getting to go to school. And more basic issues. We want to have our own voice and we want to learn about it early. And it occurred to me, it's so true because if we can have little girls at that age talking about empowerment and their rights, imagine how amazing, you know, because these girls were anywhere from 8 years old to, you know, 15, 16. But if they can learn about their rights at an early age, they will be so much more empowered when they become young women. So I said, I'm on board and I helped them. And it all sounds simplistic. It was a huge amount of work.
I'm sure.
Well, we had to convince all these countries to support it. It was a lot of meetings with world leaders. But I have to tell you, at the time, it was the Obama White House. And I wish I could remember the name of the woman who worked in the White House on women's issues, but she was a huge support and helped me behind the scenes to get support from other countries. And she helped me, you know, at a couple of times that were really vital. So we had support from the Obama White House. We had support from a number of other countries. And we just worked hard, kept at it until we convinced people that it was the right thing to do. And it passed. And so now all around the world, it's celebrated. And it's a day to focus on girls' issues like a right to an education, which, you know what, the truth is, in many, many countries, this is still an issue. Girls don't have the opportunity to go to school. And that's, and, you know, even in countries as modern as India, we still see little girls, you know, literally being dismissed, discounted, and even kind of thrown away as garbage in some parts of the country because they're girls. They don't have any value like boys do. So there's a lot of work to do to make sure that girls and boys are treated equally around the world.
Well, yeah, it sounds like you work awful hard around the clock. And I had to ask you a question. So my very good friend, she's one of your constituents. Her name is Marilee Wilson, and she's a yoga instructor in Halifax, Nova Scotia. And she wanted me to ask you a question on behalf of the students who come to her asking for advice about stress relief. So I know you love a good sweat session, you know, to get let off some steam. But what are some other ways you manage stress, that you maintain calm when you have so much going on? Because you're doing this plus 10 other things, I'm sure, every day.
I think, first of all, mentally, you have to remind yourself of what's important. And I know that sounds very simple, but it's important. Remind yourself of what your priorities at work are, what your priorities at home are, and try and stay focused on those things so that when stressful things happen that seem that are distracting, you can focus your mind. But stress happens to all of us, and so what do we do to help alleviate that? I love yoga, but the truth is, in my job, I rarely get time to get to do those kinds of things that I love to do, like yoga. I've taken time off at times when I really needed it to do a yoga retreat over holidays, and that was amazing. But on a day-to-day basis, when I just need to escape, I try things. I'll do, like a lot of people, I binge on Netflix. I'll find, I do, I love it. And I love that you can binge now on Netflix, because before, you know, if you wait for the next week to see your show. But I'll just say, okay, this morning they have a time off, a big bowl of popcorn, and I'm just going to watch a bunch of Netflix of a show that I love. It takes my mind off everything, and I love that. I also love to get out into nature, and I love that connection with nature. It just, the crisp air, and when you're out snowshoeing or you're out hiking, just that feeling you get when you're out in nature is just so great for stress relief. So that's what I do. Of course, I take all my vitamins and do what my doctor tells me. My staff like to tease me, but I also have this Hudson's Bay blanket, this beautiful Hudson's Bay cashmere blanket that's like this amazing cuddle blanket. Embarrassingly, I take it everywhere. I have it. It's funny, but it's crazy. I have it on the plane, so I drag it on the plane, and everyone teases me on the plane about it, that I have my own blankie, and then I take it to every single, pretty much every hotel I have to stay in, everywhere I go, I take this blanket with me, because it's sort of just my own little cuddle blanket, so that I have a little piece of comfort with me. So that's a little stress relief, too.
Oh, I bet. It's got to be nice to have something that just feels like yours and feels like home, no matter where you are.
Exactly.
And, yeah, so, you know, as we were just sort of discussing, like, saying you're busy is a crazy understatement. So could you tell us a little bit about what does a typical day look like for you, if that even exists? And, like, how do you logistically fit in a workout when you've got so many other responsibilities and I'm sure so many people pulling at your sleeves asking you to do five other things that you didn't even sign up for?
The only way I can fit in a workout is if I get up early and do it. And that's what I do. And if I, you know, it is to me the most important thing for my physical health and my mental health. I just love how you feel when you've been working out. It's just the wonderful thing. And yes, my job is busy, and a lot of people's lives are busy, but I can give you an example. I was in 9 cities in 3 days.
Wow.
I'm not kidding. I just got back, and that's how much I traveled in the last 3 days. So, you know, that takes a toll. You try and eat healthy when you're on the road, and that's hard because you're always in front of, you know, a snack bar in an airport, and they don't always have healthy snacks. But my days are busy, but, you know, a lot of people's days are busy, but I try and get in that morning workout. We have a leadership team meeting every morning where we have to make important strategic decisions with my leadership team. I have a planning and priorities meeting that I chair, and then we also have our shadow cabinet meetings with all of our team. I have a team of people that work with me on getting ready for question period, and then we have an hour of question period. I have a lot of stakeholder meetings, like different organizations. Just today, just now, before I'm talking to you, the Canadian Cancer Society came in, and I met with their volunteers that are cancer survivors, because today is Daffodil Day, and we're talking about the importance of cancer support for cancer research. meeting with people that come from all across the country that just want to come in and tell you what's important for them. And I also do lots of interviews and media and press. And then at the end of the day, we hold receptions at our official residence. Tonight, we're having a Vaisakhi reception to celebrate Vaisakhi. And so we'll have a number of people from the South Asian community in, and we'll have a nice celebration. But there's lots of hosting as well. So yes, it's busy. It's really busy.
Well, I can imagine. Yeah. So you were at one time the health minister. And I was wondering, what was your biggest challenge you undertook during your tenure? And what do you hope for that department in the future?
I think that the biggest challenge right in the middle of my tenure as health minister, Ebola happened. And I'll tell you why it was a challenge for myself. Canada took a lead on the Ebola crisis. It was happening in West Africa, but the world was worried. As you can probably remember, we had a nurse in Texas who had Ebola. And, you know, this people were worried that this would come to North America. Canada had the vaccine. We discovered the vaccine. We had very little of it left to use. It was a very stressful time because we were working with other countries to use the vaccine to save lives. We were also working with the United Nations, the World Health Organization, to create more vaccine as fast as possible so we could save the lives of hundreds of people and thousands of people in West Africa. But Canada was in the lead, and I was the health minister behind the scenes, literally negotiating with the World Health Organization, working with the United States Secretary of Health on these issues. But at the end of the day, every decision that you make in these kinds of situations is a life and death situation, and people were dying and suffering. And so it was a big challenge, but I think it was handled well. Canada did a lot to help the world crisis, and more than anything, not just the discovery of the vaccine, but the production, quick production of the vaccine so that we could get it to people and help save lives. So, and I think what I would say about the health system, what I hope for on health is that one day we have a health system that's focused on health prevention instead of disease treatment. You know, we have a health system, and it's probably the same in the United States as it is here in Canada, is that, you know, our health system is really set up to treat people when they're sick, and we need to have a health system that prevents people from getting sick. And that's a real culture shift. And more people are taking care of their own health and preventing themselves from getting sick and getting diseases. And that's because people have been empowered by all this great information. But we don't have a health system yet that's really caught up to that. But I think, you know, Canadians and others and Americans will demand that. I really do. I think people will demand it because they want to empower themselves with the best way to stay healthy.
Now, you were just talking about having to negotiate with, you know, the World Health Organization. And earlier you were talking about how nasty it can get in politics and, you know, really fairly personal. And one of the things we hear from our readers, and if I'm being totally honest, this is something I really struggle with myself, is that confrontation is hard, especially when it comes to something about which you're really, something you're really passionate about. I find it really easy to become overly emotional, and then, you know, my argument loses all kinds of strength because then my voice shakes and, you know, it goes downhill from there. Clearly, you're really good at this. So, I mean, you're one of the people who has to pose the really tough questions to Justin Trudeau, which, I mean, hats off to you. That sounds really scary. And I would love to know your best tips for people who are like me and struggle with confrontation or standing up for things that they believe so strongly in.
I think, you know, I think it's okay to be passionate. I think people like to see passion in people, and it's good. I think we should never be afraid to show our passion. But I don't think it's okay to be disrespectful. And there's a big difference in how you say the things you say. And it's okay if you're passionate about something. I encourage you to, and it's okay if your voice shakes. I mean, and you say something that's, I think people appreciate that people get emotional about things they care about, and that is okay. It's not okay to name call. It's not okay to degrade. It's not okay to be disrespectful. And that's, I think, the difference. And so I encourage you, it's okay to be passionate. I think people really appreciate. You know, and if you aren't passionate about the things you believe in, change doesn't happen. But I think where people lose credibility, and I don't think that's what you're talking about, is when they start to name call and get really disrespectful. Because look, we may all have different ideas, and in the House of Commons, this happens for us. I mean, I'm asking a tough question, but I would never say it in a way that I felt was disrespecting the Prime Minister. He's still the Prime Minister. But I can ask him really tough questions that make him uncomfortable, and he has to answer them, and that's my job, and I will do it. But I think that there's nothing wrong with being passionate about the things we believe in.
So growing up in, well, mainly growing up in Brazil and five other countries you described before. So you speak Portuguese and Spanish, and then I assume you also speak French and English with your job every day?
I do my best.
Yeah, so how is that communicating? And, you know, is it difference between also between Quebecois and French? I mean, there's like three different languages you have to kind of deal with there, or is it just the two?
It's just the two. We have two official languages, which is mm-hmm. French and Canadian. Mm-hmm. French and English. Mm-hmm. And it's really important as political leaders that we do our utmost to speak both languages. So I've learned, I constantly am learning French, but I do my best to communicate in both languages. And that shows a level of respect that's really important for myself and all of us to both official languages. And French is for the Francophone community is a minority community in Canada, mm-hmm. but French is an official language in Canada. So I ask a lot of questions in French in the House when I speak. I try and answer questions with the press in French to make sure that we are communicating in French. And I don't get as often time to speak Portuguese or Spanish, but my Portuguese are probably, you know, it's easier for me just because I grew up speaking it as a little kid. So you find you don't forget it, but I'd love to brush up on my Spanish because that's a beautiful language.
It is. I'm actually in the process of relearning it now. I was fluent back in college and then it went away. So I've got a date tomorrow morning with a friend for coffee and speaking Espanol.
That's the best way to do it, isn't it? It's the best way to do it. Yeah.
It is. Now, rumor has it that you are a little bit of a foodie and that you're really good at finding healthy eats even when you're traveling and on the road. So could you share a little bit about maybe how you eat well or find the really good places when you're on the road and what some of your favorite healthy dishes are?
Sure. I love food and I love to even research when we're traveling somewhere, if we have time, you know, where there's a great little restaurant, you know, something that people in the local community love to go to. It's fun for me and it kind of gives you, you know, instead of always eating at the same hotel restaurant, but just getting out into the community. It's fun to see where local people are eating and just feel that vibe in the local neighborhoods. And I like doing that because then you're really getting out there and seeing where people are. And I like that feeling. I love juicing, which is all kinds of work, but it's worth it in the end because I love veggies and I love fruit and I love I put these really hot spicy peppers in my juices and it makes them really yummy. I love grilled fish. I love Mediterranean style food. I love to have a regular salad with fresh lemon and, you know, good olive oil. And, you know, that's just really fresh food. And when I travel, I'll even make a bag of popcorn at home and sprinkle some hot cayenne pepper on it. And then I take it on a plane with me. So I have something to snack on that, you know, is low in fat, but still a snack. I'll travel with veggies, you know, just put a bunch of veggies in my purse and a little Ziploc. And so that I have some healthy food on the road with me. And when we're on the road, I love dim sum. I love Vietnamese food, especially. I love ramen. I love pho. So we will find places like that to go for, you know, a great pho soup, or some dim sum. And I guess, you know, of course, I also love to have a martini, but that's not a great snack.
Oh, yes,
but
it is.
That would be a really good snack, actually.
There's the olive in there, which makes it snack food.
Totally.
Yeah, it's eligible to be considered a snack food because of the olive.
Absolutely. Totally a redeeming quality.
Yeah.
Well, you've been a fantastic guest. We could probably talk to you all afternoon. You are probably the most accomplished person we've spoken to on this show so far. I mean, you're so interesting and we appreciate you giving us this time today, but we'd like to ask you just one more question, if that's okay.
Sure.
So it's the question we ask everyone. It's the last question. So my question to you, Rana, what was the last song you listened to before you did this podcast interview?
Oh, my gosh. The last song.
Thinking about what your day was like.
Well, there's not a lot of music in this world that I live in. So it would probably be in the car. You know what song? Well, the song that stuck in my head for when we were in the air, we were in the airport yesterday, is Justin Bieber baby. And you know, for he's Canadian, you all know that.
Oh, right? Yes. All the Canadians mention him.
I know, yes. I know. First of all, when he was going through his bad phase, we all pretended he wasn't Canadian. And then now that he's on his like redeeming tour, we're saying, yeah, do you remember he's Canadian? No, I'm kidding. But it was just a song that stuck in my head. It was in the airport, and that's probably the last song I can remember, because then I got in really late last night, went to bed, got up, and I've just been in meetings all day. So that would be the last song.
Well, you're sticking with your other Canadian peeps because they all mentioned Justin Bieber.
Literally. I love it.
Hilarious. Yeah, I don't know if I should admit that as professional, you know, adult woman that Justin Bieber baby is my song.
It's a great song.
You're in good company.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Yeah, you too. You guys take care, and thanks for the great work you're doing.
Love this show? Tell us why in a 5-star review on iTunes, and we'll read it on the air. Also, make sure you are a subscriber. If you want to reach out to say hi or have a question about a recent episode, yay, well, feel free to email us at podcast@fitbottomgirls.com. And if this podcast jives perfectly with your brand, consider sponsoring the show. Get more info by emailing advertising@fitbottomgirls.com. Find all kinds of Fit Bottom goodness online and on social media at Fit Bottom Girls, Fit Bottom Mamas, Fit Bottom Eats, and Fit Bottom Zen. And if books and movies are your thing, check out the other podcast I co-host called Book vs. Movie, which you can find anywhere where you search for podcasts. Thanks for listening.